Hey, Bill and Gunn, welcome to Black and White Tribal Edition. We're here with you today. We're a bit short-staffed today. We've got Ganyara and myself. Everyone seems to be on these extra-long holidays. And, you know, the fact that it's been raining up here for a few weeks is... You know, I love the rain, but it keeps people away from the office sometimes. But Bumi and Yirrkala are away doing Yidinji business, and good on them, and we'll catch them, I guess, next week. Ganyara, I know that we've been talking about, well, this last weekend really was about Anzac Day and things like that, and that's a very important event inside of Australia. And you know, from just my own view, I can safely say thanks to the men and women that, you know, did their bit to look after this continent, you know. And because it's the same values that the Yidinji have, and that they want to protect their territory. And yes, there is this treaty impasse, but as we say here, it's not about the men and women, really. It's, you know, it's about this... this administration and our government, that is the sovereign Yidinji government, needs to successfully conclude some sort of formal agreement to allow certain businesses to occur on the territory, and in the interests of peace and security. And, you know, that would help provide a model for the world on how to, you know, broker peace and solution solving and all that kind of stuff. And yeah, I think that's a wonderful. I think every family member might have a bit of a connection with the Anzacs.
Oh, look, most of them do. You know, there has been a lot of stuff going on over the years where the Australians were actively involved, and, you know, even down to where the Indigenous people were involved in it. You know, even though there was a bit of unfairness on the return, that sort of stuff there, but we won't mention that this week, you know, after Anzac. But yes, what Yidinji is trying to achieve through this treaty that we're trying to get Australia to the table to is a power sharing arrangement between the coexisting sovereignties, which is a big thing now in the light of what's going on, you know, out in the Solomons with China moving in there a bit. I can't blame the Chinese, but, you know, the Australians let their guard down. They took a bit too cheap, thought they had the Solomons under control. But Australia must be very, very careful what it's doing at present, you know. Even after all this hard effort of the Anzacs and all that, all the conflicts that they've all been in, there is no security for the Commonwealth of Australia here. There's no treaty, period.
Yeah, and you can see that reflected even in the comments this week. And, I mean, I'm not going to dwell on those, like you said, but, you know, Indigenous soldiers were not eligible for soldier settlement schemes, for example, and most of the best farming land in Aboriginal reserves was confiscated for soldier settlement blocks. So there are certain comments out by Indigenous characters on Twitter and social media highlighting this injustice there. I think that spirit of mateship is really important, because that's what I believe, anyway, that was something that the Indigenous nations pass on to the British and you know, the Australians, is that fair go and all that kind of stuff, all these things that are uniquely Australian, let's say, the larrikinism and all that kind of stuff. You know, there's a lot of that goes on in the tribal societies, and I think that's a positive thing. But I have to say that at last weekend, I'm very happy to report that I was one of four government ministers that attended an event here on the in the city of Gimoy, rather, on the Yidinji territory. There were people there talking about the frontier wars. And I think I know what they mean by that, but we know that there were never wars here, because there has to be some sort of declaration. That wasn't really done, and we know that because the High Court and other things talked about that. But there's something you can yarn about.
Yeah, look, no, it was more about what actually took place was not conquest but settlement. This is where the Indigenous people were dispossessed of their, you know, land bit by bit by bit. There was no military force sent out to actually take it from them. So it wasn't an act of war or conquest. And I'd be very careful about using the word war, because it may eventually get to that much, common usage that it is perceived as a war, you know, that it was a war, that it was gained by conquest, and the High Court determination in Mabo was overturned, which would be sad if the Indigenous people lose their territory just by the simple lack of understanding of the word war. Paul Keating got it right. As he said in his Red Fern speech in 92, we done the murdering. We took their lands. We smashed their families. You know, it wasn't murder. It was genocide. It was theft. It was invasion or intrusion, probably is the best word. Not invasion. It was intrusion upon our territory. And people are now occupying it. And this is a big, big thing that people don't understand. When it's an occupational force that's there, you know, and not the military that's occupying the place. It's the everyday Australians. It's the government. They're occupying here. But it's a belligerent occupation. They didn't get sovereignty, sovereignty at all, let alone correctly. They just moved in and said their sovereignty is going to reign, while the other sovereignty is going to hide in the shadows somewhere. What they should have done, as an act of conquest, was you declare war on them, go in, conquer them, take over their law, destroy that, implement your law properly across all people, including those who you'd conquered, and then you would have had the place, the territory, properly. But since 1945, you know, after the Second World War, you know, you can't, no UN member state can gain territory by conquest. You know, I see the Israelis, it's an act of settlement in Palestine with the Palestinians. So, you know, still not a war going on there. People don't understand this stuff. It's very, very serious implications that an act of settlement is not gaining sovereignty over the country. And this is the important part, because if you've been occupied by a belligerent occupant, your inhabitants, your Indigenous peoples, do not owe any allegiance to the occupational force. You know, you still got to have allegiance to your society or sovereignty. And there's a big, big thing here with that, especially in light of the stuff with China going on out in the Coral Sea. You know, maybe Australia want to be very careful that the Chinese don't want to do a proper treaty, get a proper formal agreement with the local people of, you know, one of the territories, one of the societies, and then they'll have every right to implement their military bases upon that place, you know. We're talking about military stuff at present because it's Anzac Day or, you know, the week after Anzac Day. But please understand this, that the Chinese would have every right to do a deal with one of the local mobs. None of them have ceded any of their sovereignty yet. They still retain that right.
Yes, this was an interesting conversation that took place on certain social media outlets. I won't name names, but these are probably some people in Australia who are, well, one of them's Harvard University graduate, so and we quickly put him in his box. One of the comments we made was that the Commonwealth of Australia would be far more secure with a successfully concluded formal agreement with the Yidinji Nation, and perhaps Australians should be asking their leaders why the Commonwealth has neither accepted or rejected Yidinji's most generous offer. This was in relation to China preparing for war with Australia, an article on livewiremarkets.com, and it's, I think, a lot of business people were on this, and anyway, they were asking, these certain characters were asking whether we're talking with China and things like that, and I think it's we put them at ease with the definitions of sovereignty, and they soon realised that Yidinji weren't part of Australia, and it might have, the coin might have dropped, I think, and the coin's dropping all over the place in Europe, Africa, everywhere. You know, everyone's starting to begin to know who the Yidinji Nation is and the current situation. And I'm sure I would encourage the administration or the administrator of the Commonwealth of Australia to get this, get to the Yidinji table as soon as possible, because the longer the Commonwealth kicks the can down the road, then, you know, it's not... it's not an act of good faith from my point of view anyway. And from the Yidinji Nation's point of view, it might be offensive.
Oh, very much so. More to the fact that it might be offensive to all the Indigenous nations, you know. They've got to show good faith, and you know maybe one way is to implement what's in the Declaration of Rights for Indigenous People. You know, bring that into law, into Australian law. You might be able to then show, look, yeah, we're gonna be a bit more fair dinkum about this. You know, letting the Indigenous people whose sovereignty still continues to this very day, you know, the coexisting sovereignty with that of the Crown, let them come back, let them do their thing, let them. Do a treaty with Australia to share power. It might be things like defence. You know, I don't think Yidinji Nation has the intent at this stage to defend itself, you know, as in create a standing military force. You know, that's just not on the radar. You know, as for whether we're talking with China, you know, we can't agree or disagree. We can't, you know, say yeah we are or no we're not. So. Australia really need to, especially their security agencies, really need to get their finger out and understand what would happen should someone like China or Russia or anyone else, one of the other states that are against the West, you know, that the West look down upon, if they do a deal here and China try to enforce the treaty or Russia try to enforce the treaty with one of the local lots here whose sovereignty hadn't been ceded, you know, they come down and do a deal. Where would Australia have its? What would Australia stand on? What legal precedent would Australia stand on?
Yes, and even now, you know, India and China have shared similar sense of histories, exploitation by Western powers. You know, the Raj system or the Royal Society system was shaken up by the British, and in China as well. There was, you know, a lot of Western influence there. There's, you know, a lot of people talking about that kind of stuff here around the world. So that's why China and India are good mates, part of the BRICS community, which is Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa. There's all these different trade blocs and community groups that are forming now around the world because they see that as a means of survival and... doing the best that they can for peace and security of their territory and their citizens. So Australia needs to really pick up the game. I say that because, you know, there is a... even Australia... America's rather... some of the greatest commentators saying that the US empire is going to fall by 2030. So, and I'm not saying that. These are modern historians and commentators that are saying that the US's power is going to peter out by then and to make way for a new global order. So we might just be seeing that new global order being formed as we speak. Last 2 weeks ago, I think it was, there was a World Government Summit in Dubai where these economists and politicos were saying, look, it's the end of money as you know it. You know, it's changing digital now. So the Yidinji Nation's preparing for this time so that we can still enjoy this territory and these lands, but not just us, it's for all people here. And that's what people, I think, should have a real close look at what the Yidinji Nation's trying to achieve here. And we've got a lot of supporters and, you know, the European Union, for example, is looking closely at our things. As I said before, there are many states, UN member states now, who are aware that the Yidinji Nation has its government and that we've got a central bank digital currency, for example, that we have, you know, around 200 citizens and it's growing. And we've got our own police and these are all little... attributes of sovereignty and nationhood that are beginning to build. And as we have mentioned before, Australia's top legal commentators are saying that Yidinji is not a micronation. It's not inside of Australia. It's acting outside of Australia. It's a micro state. So like the Vatican, Luxembourg, San Marino, Andorra, Moldova, all these smaller territories, we're in the same basket as them. So it's going to get interesting.
Oh, absolutely. Look, there's a number of international actors that are starting to recognise the Yidinji government for what it really is, you know, the Yidinji Nation. That it is a self-governing territory, which it always has been. It's one of the original nations that were on this continent. Whereas the Australians come in, you know, as in 1901, the British moved in, didn't do any deals. They left the laws and authority standing here, and they just brought their own laws in for their people, which is really sad for this. This is why we're in the mess we're in today. So the Yidinji Nation has revitalised that, but also modernised all its laws in accord with the articles of the UN Declaration. So, you know, we don't mind using the document, even though we didn't support or ratify it, but we use it for what it said. Australia agreed with it, so we actually do use it. Now, that is all part of the assertion of the validity of Yidinji laws. And really, you know, a further assertion is, you know, the identity, the money, the society that can identify its citizens. Because there was actually a very interesting case, Love, you know, versus the Commonwealth, where the court said, you know, where are the people from your pre-sovereignty society that can identify you in your true and correct capacity, basically. And that's one of the requirements. You know, you've got to be, your sovereignty still has to be intact in using it. You've got to revitalise it, bring it back to life. So Yidinji are doing that. We can actually show on our registers who our citizens are. We can show on our registers who has what vehicle license. We can show who's a police officer. We can show who the cabinet members are, who the government is, who the executive, you know, is. It's all there. We can show where our land titles are. This is what you've got to create, and this is where the sovereignty needs to be sorted out with Australia. Who's going to share what powers? Now, as I said, you know, we don't have any intention at this stage on the immediate horizon to defend ourselves through a military force. But that's not to say we can't or we won't. You know, should Australia fail us, should they weaken, as you alluded to there, the US authority may wane in this area, because they are up against roughly a third to half the population. You know, the Chinese-India alliance, you know, is a huge block of people. So their authority may wane in the South Pacific. You know, I see they were saying that if a military installation goes on in the Solomons, that'll be a red line. So you don't know what the conflict's going to be, you don't know how it's going to evolve. But what I'm trying to say to Australia is, you know, they need to get to the table now and shore up their foundation to have them here, to let them be here. We were the ones that were colonised. The Indigenous nations were the ones that were colonised, not the Commonwealth of Australia. And to decolonise in accord with Resolution 1514, that the Commonwealth of Australia supported, by the way, the UN Resolution 1514, the world was going to decolonise starting from 1960 onwards. But we were the ones colonised. Well, why weren't we given our territory back properly, you know, correctly? Why was it given to Australia? Or why was it Australia claiming to be the one that was decolonised? Because they don't have a country, they don't have a homeland to go to. Unlike the Yidinji, we got our territory, our homeland, but where's Australia's? And that's a big question, because when it comes to something like China, you know, if China gets a formal agreement or treaty with one of the local mob, they'll be able to take that into the International Court of Arbitration, for example, or the International Courts of Justice if any crimes occur here, and drag Australia into there. You know, how is Australia going to defend itself in that international sphere of law when it doesn't have a formal agreement? It hasn't sorted out the coexisting sovereignties. You know, it may get sorted out for them should one of the Indigenous nations choose to side with one of the other side, you know, the Russia, China, whatever, India. So that's very important. That's why I'm saying that Australia should get UNDRIP into its legal framework, into its law, to show good faith.
Absolutely. I think Senator Lydia Thorpe is one of those senators pushing for that. And anyway, we'll be back after the break. You're listening to Black Law Tribal Edition right across the planet.
Go, daddy, I don't know. Australia of 870 Culture, and when I'm in Cairns, the only station I listen to is BBM.
Yes, welcome back. Welcome back to the show. I hope you're doing well. This week, the Yidingi Reserve Bank Board had a meeting just to start the ball rolling, because as you probably have heard on the show, that the Yidingi Nation has a central bank digital currency, and we have all the laws and legislation in place that enables us to do that. It's not just making up out of thin air. The written law is there to give that right, or to write into existence. The Yidingi Reserve Bank, for example. And today, we're talking about that today. But this week we did have a meeting to discuss those things. And Ginyara, I think this is a very exciting journey, because it's one thing that, and I say this with all sincerity, it's very difficult to do what we do without Yidingi money. It is hard. It's hard slog. It's love, sweat, and tears. It's people's charity. You've contributed heaps. There's lots of all the different family groups, and have come in here and provided time and energy, and from the very beginning, even selling artwork and stuff to get an exchange for goods was a bit hard, because the Commonwealth, as a former senator said to me, we can't fund a foreign government. He said we can't be seen funding a foreign government. It's just ridiculous. So what's this going on here? Hang on. So I think that's a really important thing, that Yidingi are not reliant on Centrelink. This is one of the questions that these people are asking. Oh, how many of you guys living off Centrelink? Not one Yidingi citizen is on Centrelink, because you can't go and get Centrelink with a Yidingi identity. You've got to use an Australian one. And we would support that 100%, that Centrelink and all the benefits of an Australian society must be for Australians. The same way that senior cabinet minister said to us, we cannot fund a foreign government. Absolutely, we agree with that 100%. That's why we're developing our own institutions, our own laws, and the Reserve Bank is one of those institutions as a result of going down this pathway.
Oh, absolutely. Look, you know, it is a long road, this one, and it is a real big step for the Yidinji Nation to enter into the world of global finances. You know, where does all the money come from? Where does it all go? How does it all operate? How does it all work together? You know, how do we buy goods and services from overseas or from other foreign nations or from the Commonwealth of Australia, for example? We had to go down to develop this, and we're doing it in accord with the Articles 3 and 4 and 5 of the UN Declaration of Rights for Indigenous Peoples, where it actually says, you know, we have a right to develop our own means of subsistence, how to look after ourselves through all our own entities, our channels, our whatever it is you want to call it. But we had to develop the bank because Yidinji citizens can't operate in Australian dollars. They got to operate in Yidinji dollars. You know, just like the Australian can't operate in Yidinji dollars, it has to operate in Australian dollars. So there's no treaty yet to allow the two things to interact at any real great level so that we continue the underwriting of Australia. But in doing so, now we've got to keep an eye on what's going on in the world and how it affects our economy, which is what the board meeting was about the other day there. You know, how does the geopolitical uncertainty affect trade or commerce or the supply of funding or the inflation or whatever, you name it. We've got to keep an eye on everything that, as best we can, you know, even though we're only a limited number, a small government. We have to do it, you know, to set our monetary policy. What are we going to set it at? What's going to be the interest rates? What's going to be the inflation target, for example, or what's going to be the, loan to capital reserve ratio? In our banks, you know, the Yidinji Development Bank is at the stage of trading now. So that's a big step. We've also got to keep monetary reserves. So as that bank develops a currency exchange, so how much currency, foreign currency, do we want to hold in reserve? Where are we going to hold it? What's going to back our money? Is it going to be gold, silver? Is it going to be carbon? Or is it going to be a total fiat currency? You know, this is all policy that's got to be set by the Reserve Bank Board.
That's right. So as part of the update, I guess, for you people listening out there, one of a former senior financial sector expert who was at the International Monetary Fund has been looking at the Yidinji situation and has been very impressed by that. The article is exploring the CBDCness, or this digital sovereign Yidinji dollar. I'm going to read this article a little bit, so bear with me. The sovereign Yidinji government launched a digital version of their sovereign Yidinji dollar, the SID, on January 26, 2022, and that will be known as National Banking Day for the Yidinji Nation, January 26. The first successful transaction was confirmed on February the 1st, and the new payment system is connected to the Metamui self-sovereign identity system that is already in use throughout the Yidinji territory. The sovereign Yidinji government and Metamui are calling the SYD a central bank digital currency, and the purpose of this post is to ascertain the CBDCness of the SYD. So he's looking at whether this is serious or not and legit. Yidinji is an Australian pre-colonial indigenous nation, he got that correct, that asserted its independence and continuing validity of Yidinji laws and customs in 2014 in accord with Resolution 1514 adopted by the United Nations General Assembly in 1960. However, until a treaty is signed between the governments of the Commonwealth of Australia and the sovereign Yidinji government regarding land rights, Yidinji will not be represented by the UN or international law. And that's true. We've always said that we want Australia first to represent the Yidinji interests. But if they don't want that, then that's what we've been talking about earlier in the program today. So he questions this. Is the SYD, the sovereign Yidinji dollar, a central bank digital currency? According to the Bank for International Settlements, a CBDC is a digital payment instrument denominated in the jurisdiction's unit of account that is issued by and a direct liability of the jurisdiction's central bank or monetary authority. The SYD, the sovereign Yidinji dollar, is obviously a digital payment instrument, and the rest of this note argues that it seems to meet the other Bank of International Settlements CBDC criteria too. So saying, yes, I'm going to tick this box. Yidinji does meet the requirements at an international standard? His next question is, does the Indonesian have a central bank? Now, he's written this, the Udinji Reserve Bank Act of 2016 established the Udinji Reserve Bank, the YRB, as the central bank of the Udinji Nation to issue the sovereign Udinji dollar. The sovereign Udinji dollar was pegged to the Australian dollar and backed by gold and silver. The Udinji Department of the Treasury guarantees the ability to exchange from SYD to AUD. And Ganyara just mentioned that earlier before about the meeting of the YRB this week to discuss these very things. Appropriate amounts of AUD are held by the YRB for these exchanges. Okay. However, according to the Act, the YRB wasn't responsible for some of the key functions associated with the central bank. The YRB had no payment system role and it was prohibited from issuing bearer money, both foundational central bank roles. Okay. So he goes on to saying, so Udinji has a central bank. Okay. It's got an efficient, sound, and safe payment system. And it has, the Udinji Reserve Bank, in his words, says, is typical central bank responsibilities, including issuing currency, regulation, supervising, depositing, and taking institutions, and overseeing those things. So it's another big green tick. The next question is the sovereign Udinji dollar, denominated in the Udinji's unit of account? This is what his reply is. To be a unit of account, a currency must be usable as a medium of exchange across a variety of transactions between several people and as such represent a form of coordination across society. The Udinji Currency Acts of 2014 and 2022, the amended one or the updated one, Udinji citizens must settle their obligations in the sovereign Udinji dollar. And Australian citizens must settle their obligations in Australian dollars. But the two currencies are convertible one-to-one. It would seem that if the digital sovereign Udinji dollar is convertible one-to-one into sovereign Udinji dollar and Australian dollar, which are both units of account in Udinji, then there's no reason to dispute its status as a unit of account. It's pretty important stuff that he's saying here, okay? So he's going through, and remember, this isn't some guy in his garage, okay? And Ganyara, I know you're keen to talk on this matter because John Kiff is not. He's a senior. He's a former senior financial expert at the International Monetary Fund. This is global finance at its peak.
Absolutely. Look, he is saying no ifs and no buts about it. That the Udinji dollar, the digital Udinji dollar, is indeed a CBDC. As it meets all the criteria, you know, it meets all the other CBDC defining criteria, you know, so it ticks every box. It is a unit of exchange. It is in the nominated currency of exchange, you know, the money of the realm, so to speak. And yes, it is. It's being issued and backed, and you know, it is a direct liability of the central bank. So it is meeting everything that makes up what you'd want to call modern money, you know, and it is denominated in Udinji dollars. There's no ifs and no buts about it. The money is being exchanged. You know, I only used it this morning. Yeah, we use it to settle debt. You know, this is how, from one Udinji citizen to another, you want to buy something from someone else, you buy it in Udinji dollar. You know, there is sufficient reserve held, you know, to exchange, you know, to Aussie dollars. So businesses, you know, really need to start to understand this stuff, that there is now a new kid on the block. But this time it's issued by one of the coexisting sovereignties. And get one thing clear. It is not a Bitcoin. It is not Ethereum. It is not a Ripple coin or a dog coin or whatever they call it. It is none of those. This is real legitimate money created, or currency, sorry, created pursuant to an act of a sovereign state, a sovereign nation. That's why we call ourselves a microstate. We're definitely not, as Harry Hobbs said, he said, Udinji are definitely not a micronation. Now, he's a constitutional expert. I think he's a doctor of constitutional law, and he made it very clear. Udinji is not a micronation. It's actually a microstate, one that has sovereignty, one that can argue its case in any court, in any jurisdiction around the world, you know, including the international courts. You know, we have the recognised sovereignty that the rest of the world acknowledge, you know, the Venezuelans, the Russians, the even the UN, the EU. They recognise the indigenous people have a right to sovereignty, which is why they all supported the UN Declaration of Rights for Indigenous Peoples. And one of those rights is to create this money. This is how we operate amongst ourselves. We don't rely on Australian dollars. That's one thing for certain there. But the key difference between our dollar, the Yidinji dollar, and the Australian dollar is ours has validity at law, first in time. Australia is really the occupational force, but ours might have some substance to it as well. You know, there is sufficient gold and silver held, you know, in undisclosed locations, of course. You know, you can't let that stuff be known because everyone seems to want to clamour for it. But in saying that, we do have exchange reserves, which are, once again, held in undisclosed locations that can be, you know, the banks have to be secure. So it's not just a free-for-all here. There is a lot of effort going into this. And we are starting to now set things like interest rates, set things like monetary policy. How do we control inflation? You know, as we start to print up more of this stuff, how do we control it? Do we, you know, what's the interest rate? What's the tax rate? It all comes into play as you advance yourself into become a modern society, I suppose. You know, where you didn't have taxation rules before, we're starting to develop those sort of little things. You know, we've got to look at how it's going to affect our world. You know, issuing this currency, which is what it really is. But if the rest of the world is starting to see it, man, I tell you what, Australia really need to get their act together to start to shore up their footing here in Australia. It's not only the Chinese issue, you know, with the military, but now all of a sudden there might be another financial hub starting to form, this time of a currency that it might have a bit more substance to it than the Australian dollar.
Yes, and I think that's really important to let people know out there what's going on. And, you know, I'm going to deviate a little bit here because I'm taking this from a spiritual aspect as well. So most of the Yidinji people believe in Gaibra, the creator who made everything. And it's interesting, like, it says in the scriptures here in Deuteronomy 28, verse 13, Gaibra will make you the head, not the tail. Okay, he's saying there, but just before that, he's saying, you will lend to many nations, but you'll borrow from none. So now in Romans 13, it says that Gaibra, or God, ordains all governments. So these are the things now we have to take forth in trust and trust in these things. We have to trust in the creator spirit to lead us down this track, but you've got to know who it is. So in Deuteronomy 28 it says, you will lend to many nations, but you will borrow from none. Gaibra will make you the head, not the tail. If you pay attention to the commands of Gaibra, your God, and carefully follow them, you will always be at the top, never at the bottom. That's the spiritual message now to every indigenous nation, pre-colonial indigenous nation on this continent that many call Australia. If you go back to your original law, which God gave you, you start to form your institutions, and not to develop a bank just to keep all the money for yourself. You see how many homeless people on the street here in Ghim at the moment? That's where we want to develop these things. We want to help countrymen get a decent place to live, to help the young people come through. Doesn't matter if you're white fella, black fella. That's what I'm saying. This is totally, it's beyond all that. That's just gammon stuff, fighting and, backbiting. The Yidinji Nation is back for business and here to defend the faith and to protect the Commonwealth of Australia through the sovereign Yidinji government. Now, we can only go so far and say, we love you, Australia, but if Australia doesn't love us back, then that'll be a very, very sad day.
Oh, absolutely, you know. And this is what we're saying. It's not only China or Russia. Look at the American assets on the continent. Pine Gap, for example. You know, the military bases that are around northern Australia. Could you imagine what would happen if the local lot that own, you know, that actually have the territory around Pine Gap, if they'd done a deal with China? You know, the Americans would become blind in the South Pacific. You know, they've really got to get over there and shore up a treaty with that local lot. And here, you know, there's the Navy base, you know. It's just not, don't take it as a foregone conclusion that it's already tied up, Because if someone starts issuing treaties, you know, one of the other nations issue treaties, you know, maybe the Americans need to get out here quickly. You know, the US need to get their diplomats out here and negotiate treaties with the local lots.
Yeah, I'm beginning to think that there are Australians who are trying to sink the ship and let it go this way. And I hope that's not true with my crazy thoughts, you know, but you got to sort of think about all these things. You got to wonder why they just keep going down this rank and not wanting to talk to us. Maybe they want to destroy Australia. Maybe they're getting paid by a foreign agency to do it. We just don't know. You know, and look, if it's not Australia, I'm pro-Israel. You know, I'm very, very, very clear about that. You know, and so we're very Jewish friendly here, by the way. And but at the end of the day, I can have my own private and personal views, but the main thing is it is what is in the best interest for the Yidinger Nation. And at this stage, you know, we are wanting to look after all the different nationalities that visit our territory. The easiest way to do that is to say to Aussie, come on, sit down, let's have a chat. And let's make a better future. You're listening to Black Law Tribal Edition right across the country today, and thanks to our friends at Bumbaboo Media, 98.7 FM, which have consent to operate on the Yidinger territory. And a big thank you to all the staff there. They put this show together, they help us broadcast that around the world. And we love you, and we'll be back after the break.
Dinner gang or Jarwin.
Hello, everyone.
Tugulu nyai nyangan.
Together we are strong.
Gili nyai dalgie.
Now we sing.
Nyala gyarara langa.
We give respect.
Long
ago, the Bangio mob.
Yangan and Bumir and Yago.
They all fought for us.
Nya dalgie yangan and
Goo.
Young and Mormon,
power, love,
buying a lina, mana,
keeps us,
yeah, get a wow. Dugula, Nyaya,
young, we are strong, all one under the sun.
Maga, Purija, Lija, Nyayenda.
Under the sun, we're all the same here. We are all shining stars. The color of my skin does not define me. Let's change the world and make it a better place.
Mindful and conscious of the voices in me, surrounded by the depths of diversity. Listen and breathe with an open mind, hear the wisdom of the elders, our hearts intertwine.
Singing the songs with others. But these words must be addressed.
Get up, get up, stand up, stand up.
This is my life.
Get up, get up, stand up, stand up.
Find a deeper melody.
Get up, get up, stand up, stand up.
This is my life, this is my life. But it sure was right.
We are all one under the sun.
Taken from our people in the stolen generation. This oppression, we feel such a better.
We are the same, we are people, we wanna feel safe and equal. We want our beliefs and language us.
From the deeper melody.
Nafashu shirina, wakbahara rangina. اشتخاص الدنيا بجيم سربستي
ونعيش حياتنا مثل ما نريد معا نحن اقوياء
ونعيش حياتنا مثل ما نريد معا نحن أقوياء
أمامي وكي هذا بك فايز قوة خلق رب العالمين تسطوها ظلام
We are all one under the sun
Never go away, maisha yetu inabadilika, inabadilika.
Mapigano ya nini, na fitina za nini, tushikane mikono, pamoja tutaweza.
They want us to be silent, what good's that? You push me, bro, I'm gonna push back. Move together, like a wolf pack. I'm taking back what's mine, bro, the full stack. I mean everything my ancestor fought for. See, we want peace, but you brought war. You never hold us back, so keep the vibes on your plan. We're all different, but united we stand.
Listen, together we can stand. You are beautiful, together we are strong. Young blood, young mind, stop racism. It's a nightmare, track with information. Just close your eyes, we heal the pain. Trust your elders to lead the way. Life's hard, you can stand with me. Like a wave to the sky with family.
We are all one under the sun. We are fighting for our rights.
Yo, yo, what's crack-a-lackin' your mob? It's Johnsy here from Jam Packed, and you're tuning into the Boots to the Action on BBM 98.7 FM. Which way are you, mob?
I can promise you'll never forget who we are. The one to break through, I am. The road that takes you, we are here.
Well, it's the end of the show. Ganyara, I think we've canvassed quite a bit there today. In summary, there was never a war here, so frontier wars is, you know, it's an Australian description. Let's just keep it there. But as the High Court said, it wasn't through conquest or anything else. And the sovereignties coexist. As the great Australians like Mark Liebler and Amanda Vanstone, Professor Megan Davis, all these other ones there, who else was there?
Yeah, Christina Keneally.
Christina Keneally. You know, they're the ones that were on that panel, that Malcolm Turnbull thing, and they're the ones that, you know, rubber-stamped this Uluru Statement. Yinji weren't co-authors of that, remember? We never were invited to it, or we were not invited to contribute to it. It's not our document. It's Australia's document. And why does Australia want a treaty? Why does it keep talking about a treaty if they don't need one? You know, so have a think about those things, but Ganyara, some final comments.
Look, probably the biggest thing is to understand who you are and what it is to have sovereignty and what is the thing that has the sovereignty. Now, as I said in Love and in the Love case, Love versus Cromwell, and Hobson, I think it was recently where it was mentioned, Hobson versus Cromwell, that you've got to go back to your pre-sovereignty society, the one that was there before the British come. And if that is still continuing to this very day, that's where you've got to be. You've got to go back to there. So you're not going to be seen as an Aboriginal Australian anymore. And that was a mistake in the Hobson case. They actually said, I'm an Aboriginal Australian. Well, if you're an Australian, you're not of that original pre-sovereignty society. So you can't get any support or any, I suppose, help there. It's no good to you. You've got to go back to that society where you were the ultimate owner. You were the one that had the ultimate law, the one that's still here. Understand where the identity is created. It's not created in Australia or New Zealand. It's created in your sovereignty, the one that coexists with that of the Crown. It's this understanding who you are and then what authority you have and what powers you have and then how far you can go with it. And that's what I think the bigger Western powers need to understand that, because if the Chinese get this, if they can understand this, then they might be out doing deals, you know, for places like Pine Gap, for like, you know, well, that mob have every right to cede that bit of territory, you know, the control of it, all where all the military installations are. Those mobs have every right to cede sovereignty to whoever they like. It's not a foregone conclusion it's going to be Australia. Our preference is Australia. But that's because we understand what's going on. But remember, there may be some of those who are really disgruntled with Australia that have had a pretty bad run, you know, up till late. Like you said, they're returning soldiers. The white fella's got everything. The black fella got a kick in the bum. You know, how fair was that? They might be a little bit disgruntled over that, a bit upset. So, look, Australia, you really need to get your act together. But the Western powers also need to push Australia to get some surety for Australia being the one here, not the Aboriginal nations letting in some other, letting in Russia, China, whatever. So this is where we've got to get this understanding to the rest of the world. Know who you are. And the world's got to know who you are as well. And that's what's going on with the likes of the ex-IMF bloke, recognising the Yidinji dollar, you know, that it does have all the attributes of a currency, of a central bank digital currency.
Yeah, look, I just want to make a big shout out, a big bonjour, comment ça va, to Charles Michel, the president of the European Council, and a big hello to you guys, and thank you for talking with Yidinji. And I know that the European nations are behind Yidinji, and because we have received that message from the European Union, and we thank them for that, for supporting Indigenous rights. They clearly have made that very clear to us. And same with the African states as well, and those in the Asia-Pacific region would be supporting all of us here. And we know that's true, because in our conversations, which are private, obviously, but I can say that, you know, these guys are supporting what Yidinji is doing. But apart from that, I won't say much more. Look, it's serious now. Wake up, Australia. The Vegemite on toast continues. We want that to keep going. You know, we want the state of origin here. We want all those beautiful things. You know, the Australian businesses on our territory, these family businesses that have been running, we want to keep continuing that. But not only that, support it with the law of the Yidinji Nation backing it 100%. It'll be secure. And you know what? It's for free. It really is. We've constantly said this before, that we do not want one Australian dollar for this thing to take place. The Yidinji has its own money. But we can give you money, Australia, if you need it, if you're, you know, you got inflation or, you know, to control all that kind of stuff. And it's the simplicity of it. Anyway, may God's peace be upon you wherever you are listening to this program. In the almighty name of Yeshua HaMashiach, the King of Kings and Lord of Lords, it's the name above all names. And we hope you can have a chat with him every day. We'll catch you next week.